And it's 9:30. The SCAC meeting of the Senior Citizens Engagement Committee is now called to order. And although Evelyn Velez is here, she cannot speak, but she's just waving hello to everybody. Let us have the inspiration. And who's doing the inspiration?
No inspiration.
Elizabeth, there is not an inspiration on the agenda, but we do have the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you, Elaine. So who is doing the Pledge of Allegiance?
And that is Jim Levy.
Who is not in attendance. Okay.
I'll do it.
All right.
Great, Tony.
Okay, please stand and hand over your heart, veteran salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and now we'll have the roll call. So, Tony Olivato.
I'm here.
Elizabeth Busick, present. Carol Downey.
Present.
Scott Fegg. Elaine Genoway.
Present.
Sherry Horn. Sherry Horn, I know you're there.
Yeah, she was muted.
Present, sorry. Okay.
Carolyn Inman is absent. Jim Levy, apparently absent. Nalita Mendoza. Nalita Mendoza, apparently absent. John Pointer.
Present, Elizabeth.
Tony Rodella.
Hoorah!
Dave Tetzloff. Absent, and Evelyn Velez, whose voice is not working, but she's here and waving. All right, and now introductions. I don't believe there's anybody to introduce, but we'll go to number five. Jean Hernandez will introduce our speaker.
Thank you, Elizabeth and Evelyn, who I hope your voice comes back strong and powerful as always. It's my pleasure to introduce Orange County Sheriff's Investigator, Dan Forrester. If you recall, we had a discussion, it might have been at the last meeting or two meetings ago, about comment about, fraud among seniors is on the rise. And we said, I said, is that a fact or is that just a feeling? What's the data show? And so we said, let's get it to one of their investigators here at the Sheriff's Department, see if they have the latest trends on that. If it is a fact, what's going on? Well, we were able to get a hold, fortunately, of Dan. Dan is a current investigator in the economic crimes detail. He's been with the Sheriff's Department for 15 years. So I'm sure he's got a pretty good handle on the trends with seniors. And Dan, that's what we're looking for, kind of what are the trends with the seniors as victims. So there's no further delays. Let's take it away, Dan. It's all yours.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me here. I'm sure you can hear me, correct?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Great. I would say while there are frauds and schemes that are directed towards seniors, unfortunately, this type of activity hits everybody. It's rampant. It is a multi-billion with a B dollar industry. I think one of the things that we try to impart on people is really to monitor your activity online, monitor your bank accounts. Things that people aren't aware of is, whether you like to believe it or not, your information is out there. Your information's on the dark web. It's obtained by mail theft. It's sometimes just given away by people unwittingly. And the type of information that we like to try to protect, it's called PII, personal identifying information. So you've got your name, your date of birth, your social, your driver's license number, your address, phone number, your bank account numbers, your social media, if you have Facebook, Instagram, things like that. You know, and a lot of scams that we're seeing, well, actually, before I get into scams, so with that information, what I like to tell people is monitor your bank accounts regularly. A lot of times you might miss a small transaction, you know, $5, $10. What a lot of times these identity thieves will try to do is they'll test your account. They'll do a small transaction for $5. It goes unnoticed. Okay, well, now I've legitimized this type of transaction, and then they'll go for $5,000. And then if that doesn't get noticed, then they'll go for $10,000. Before you know it, you might be out, you know, $20,000, $50,000 unwittingly. So monitor your accounts. And then the other thing I tell people is monitor your credit. If somebody changes your address online without your knowledge, somebody might be opening credit card accounts in your name, bank accounts in your name, investment accounts, things like that without you knowing. So you're entitled to one free credit report per year, you know, Experian, TransUnion, Equifax. And one way to even prevent that from even happening is to freeze your accounts ahead of time. So that way, no new accounts can be opened without your knowledge. And if you want to open a new account, you call the credit reporting agency and you say, I'm going to freeze my account. And if you want to open something new, you call them up, say, unfreeze it for a day, open your new account and refreeze it again. Now, to get into scams, and even specifically towards senior scams, a lot of that are done these days is the most specific are romance scams. People meet other people online all the time, whether it's through Facebook, dating apps, games that you play online.
Dan, could you hold it for just a second?
Yeah, someone sure.
Has their, someone, I think we should all be muted because there's
I think that may be Dan's office though. Oh, yeah, we all are muted.
Okay,
you hear a phone ringing in the background? Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
About that. So the types of scams that we see are what it was like romance scams, meeting people online, befriending people online. And, you know, you might think you're talking to somebody that's in your same age range, in the same demographic of you. But in reality, you're talking to a random person in another country on another continent or somebody else in the United States. So one of the things we like to tell people is don't send money to people you don't know. Don't do business in gift cards. People don't do business in gift cards. That's a big scam right now, as well as, you know, you get called up by the IRS and says, oh, you owe us $10,000 in back taxes. And we're going to send a deputy to your house right now to arrest you. You can take care of this if you send us $10,000 in Target gift cards to pay off your balance. Well, the United States government doesn't do business in Target gift cards. They want, you know, cold hard U.S. currency. It's the IRS. You get called on the phone. You get a text message saying, "Oh, it's Chase fraud," and you call the number they give you. And in reality, you're not talking to Chase fraud. You're talking to a scammer in India. So I think the biggest kind of takeaway in regarding to scams is, you know, anytime you get a feeling inside of you that something doesn't seem right, just hang up the phone. You know, if it's legit, they'll call you back. Or if you think it's your bank trying to call you, go on Google, search Chase Bank, look up their customer service number, call them back, and try to avoid dealing with somebody that calls you. That's the only way they can get you, is if you stay on the line with them, they call you. We also get some phishing where you get a random email that says, oh, there's some fraud from Amazon on your account. You click on a link and you give somebody access to your computer. And before you know it, they're accessing your bank account without you knowing behind the scenes and transferring money out of your account into some other account. So if you are the victim of identity theft, there's a few things you can do. One is you want to make sure you check your credit. Right away on Experian, make sure there's nothing that you don't know about. You want to close any accounts that may be affected. You could file a police report with the sheriff's department or with whatever jurisdiction that you live in. You can also file a report on ic3.gov, which is a federal website. And that will give right to the FBI. And what they do is they aggregate the reports that come in. And once they meet a minimum dollar threshold of $1 million or regarding a similar type of scam, they'll initiate an investigation and take it to the federal level. So that's kind of I know I only got like 10 minutes here, so I don't want to go too long, but I want to kind of give a good brief overview. And if anybody has any questions, I'm willing to answer any questions on that.
Okay, colleagues, any questions at all? I know that it is rampant, and I can tell you when I was working as a chief that we had a lot of victims. You know, we kind of all smiled when we said, yeah, send it in cards, you know, these little gift cards. You'd be amazed how many people do that. But it's so subtle. In our case, we were getting our priest got hacked, and he sends it specifically. He says your name. Hey, Gene, you know, I was supposed to pick up some cards for this home. I'm busy right now and I can't get to it. Would you mind going down there and pick up a couple of, Walmart cards for me or Target cards? And I'll pay you back as soon as I see you and just take them over here, you know, and put them in this P.O. box or whatever. And you go, and initially I thought, why is Father C calling? Yeah, that's weird. But for a moment I thought, well, maybe he doesn't need help. Then I realized that can't be. He wouldn't do business that way. And sure enough, that was not the case. So you just don't know on these things. So, and you know, as we get older, there's a lot of credibility. We believe when someone says, we're going to come over and arrest you. People will believe that. You know, I don't want that to happen. Let me pay money up front so this doesn't happen to me. So don't be too quick to judge and condemn our fellow seniors because they're willing victims. Okay, Elaine, I see your hands up.
Okay, thank you, Gene. A question I have is, many seniors are targeted and many of us receive our information online virtually through emails and things like that. But how do you connect with seniors who do not use the internet, who are not, because they are extremely vulnerable because they are not receiving that prevention information. So how do you reach out to those who aren't using the computer or internet or email or getting information that way?
I have done presentations at senior centers before. So that's one way that we get out to those people. We also like to tell, you know, we do a lot of social media blasts. We do town halls at different cities around the county. And, sometimes if there's, younger people there that, in their, 30s, 40s, 50s, and they have elderly parents, we tell them, hey, look, like, your parents may not understand this or whatever. Might not be adept in internet things. Please share this information with them. Elderly people, they have like a dabbling in the internet, but they don't, they don't fully grasp what people can do with the internet. Mm-hmm. So a lot of education actually comes from their children, and we try to tell them like, hey, look, these are the pitfalls. These are where you could go wrong, and you get caught up in the moment. We try to avoid that. So,
okay.
Thank you. Carol, I'll get to you in half a second. Let me give another quick example of that. Again, when I was working, I was doing fraud training for our department. I asked a friend of mine who was an investigative reporter, not a police type, an investigative reporter. He and I went to high school together, and he said, "Well, Gene, give me a couple of names of officers that'll be in the class." And I did that. And so when he came and spoke, and he goes, well, Officer Davis over there, for instance, and he gave a whole background on where he lived, how much money he made, what his parents' names were. This had nothing to do with the internet. And he got all this information legally through his sources. Keep in mind, every time we fill out a mortgage form or a loan form, something that has nothing to do with the internet or public knowledge, that can become a public record, and the scammers get a hold of those documents, and they can get a whole lot of information that doesn't come from the internet. It comes from every time you've bought a car or took out a home loan or took out a loan for the car, or you got married. Think of all the application information you fill out. That can be a public record, and people get access to that, and they'll know you better than they know, yourself. He did that with me. I was another one of the examples he gave. And I was shocked. Where did you get that? well, didn't you apply for a second or a, when you bought your first home? And I go, how did you get that information? I thought that was private. Trust me, folks, nothing's private. Nothing. There are ways to get all that information. I don't mean with search warrants. Please, we do it lazy because we have the ability to get a search warrant and get that information. He would go through all these other sources, Hall of Records, you know, all kinds of things. So just heads up. All right, Carol. You're muted, Carol.
There I go. Yes, Dan, I subscribe to a credit monitoring company that does that for me. And I have found that to be effective. Although it costs money, it keeps me, then I don't have to call the credit reporting agencies and go through all of that process that you have to get a hold of somebody. And it's been pretty effective. They've called me when anything suspicious has appeared. Do you find that they're pretty effective generally?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, they're doing what you're paying them to do, and they provide liability coverage. If something does go through, they'll reimburse you. And generally, if you're the victim of identity theft, any charges that are unbeknownst to you that come under your account, banks will reimburse you as well. So, you know, the coverage that they say is really, I think that's a little bit embellished, because the banks are going to reimburse you anyway for any type of fraudulent activity that you didn't initiate. But those types of programs will not protect you against getting scammed. If you willingly give your money away to a scammer, the banks will not reimburse you. Your LifeLock will not reimburse you. You're on the hook for that money if you decide you want to give it away. So that's something to be mindful of.
I got it to make sure that no one tried to open a credit card or something in my name. And that's been really effective with that.
That's great. I always recommend people to do it. If you think it'll give you peace of mind and you're okay with spending the extra money, then, you know, they do what they're intended to do. So.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Did you pick up on the fact of what Dan said, the monetary amount is when they launch into an investigation? It's like $1 million for a fraud. So keep in mind, if you've been swindled or fraud, a victim of fraud for, you know, hundreds of dollars, even thousands of dollars, no one's going to investigate that. They don't have the time or the manpower to do it. So just a heads up, just don't be shocked when you go, well, you know, I got scammed out of $25,000. You know what? So sorry, so sad, but no one's going to do anything. I mean, you'll report it, but that is not going to be actively investigated. Is that accurate, Dan?
I mean, we will investigate to the best of our ability. It's at the local level, it's actually really hard. That's why, you know, when I was talking earlier about filing a complaint on IC3.gov, the feds have way more power than we do local. You know, anytime I write a search warrant to the email address that you were communicating with on the scam, it's going to come back to, you know, Nigeria or India or South America or, you know, Hong Kong. So I have no power to do anything with that. So we either send the case to the FBI or the Secret Service or something like that, and hopefully they can do some follow-up. But, you know, I tell people too, like, we don't have the ability to get your money back at the local level here. The FBI, maybe they can freeze funds better than we can. But we're just looking for criminal prosecution. If you get scammed, we will not get your money back. I would say 99.9% of the time. So just something to be mindful of.
Yeah, and the feds have a much higher threshold. However, don't be discouraged from calling the police anyway, because what that does do is add to the pile of crimes that are being incurred by this criminal group. And that then gets the feds' interest to say, okay, it's not just you. It's like thousands of people are being scammed that way. And then they start working to get to the international cartel that's doing that, the criminal group that's doing that, whether it be in Africa or in Eastern Europe. And that's why, so don't be discouraged. Well, okay, I'm out, you know, $100,000. I guess I'm just out of it. Well, you probably won't get it back, but you may help take down that group. And then if they have any assets, again, a long process, you might be able to get something back. But yeah, pretty much if you get scammed, you're out of luck. But pay attention. Prevention is the key. After the fact, weak. Anything else for Dan? Yeah, Elizabeth.
I would like to add one. I know of a lady who's now dead and she had Alzheimer's, but she was, she had her home in Laguna Hills and she was quite elderly and lonely. No access to internet at all. It was the telephone. And so she was lonely and they got her and she actually made trips to the bank to send money to them. I mean, it was unbelievable. Finally, her daughter sold the house and had her mother come live with her and the daughter and her family. But no internet at all, just the telephone.
Well, the banks now, they train their employees too, and they're a little more savvy. When seniors come in drawing large amounts of money, they're pretty quick to say, oh, really, where's this money going? And, you know, and so they'll start asking questions and that helps. Yes, Sherry, go ahead.
I have a question. The county has made an effort to get iPads into the hands of seniors for communication and social engagement and stuff. I know you say that a lot of these scams come through things other than the internet, but giving people access to the internet where they could click on, if they're not real, real familiar, where they could click on things, do you have any feeling whether that's has more risk or reward, something like that? Like, have you seen an increase of a lot of elder abuse through online things, through iPads and things?
People get scammed in all kinds of ways. Giving people more access to get ways to get scammed is, you know, it just increases their odds. If you give somebody an iPad, maybe don't download their Bank of America app with access to their account on there and just keep it to what they want to use. You can kind of, I don't want to say baby them, but you know, there are parental controls. There's things that you can do to safeguard a little bit on these devices and restrict access to things. I think elderly people are very trusting and, they're not as quick on the uptake in how fast things move. And, you know, these scammers also prey on that because they will hound them and hound them and hound them until they give in. And, you know, a lot of the older generation, they don't hang up on people. You know what I mean? They don't have that ability to be like, get out of here, you know, click. And they'll stay on the phone because they don't want to be seen as rude. Or they'll, you know, continue to communicate because they don't want to be seen as rude. So, giving people more access, it could lead to it. But that's why we try to educate and say, hey, look, like, let's keep this to what we want to use it for and restrict access if we can. So,
and remember that social media platforms, they have these algorithms that monitor what you're interested in. And when you're socially, I'm talking to you, Sherry, and all of a sudden something will pop up in advertisement and go, oh, I'm interested in that. And you click it. So they're looking to see what captures your interest. Well, that's the same thing that scammers can then do and say, oh, Sherry's really interested in floral arrangements. So we're going to throw something up there and give a ridiculous low price. And if she clicks on it, now we got her. So it's really hard because you're right. It's a balancing act. You want the seniors to have a social life, talk to their family, you know, that kind of thing. But just know there's a wedge to get in that way. So I rarely use Facebook and I don't use Twitter or any of those because they'll say, hey, Gene, we noticed you haven't been on here very long. I only go on there to capture a picture of a family event. And I know what I want. I don't go in there for all this other stuff because it's just not worth the risk. Thank you. Any other questions for Dan? Well, Dan, thank you very much for your time and sharing your information expertise with us. We really appreciate it. And at least we'll not be seeing you if we can get the word out. So we won't be victims at least. But thank you very much. And we appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And you're welcome to stick around and listen, but I'm sure you're out there catching more crooks. So go for it.
All right. Thanks. Take care, guys.
You bet. So, okay. Back to you, Elizabeth. And good information. And I think Dan hit on the head. Share it with our friends and neighbors. Share it with your family. You think everybody knows these things now, but they don't, especially the shut-ins because of COVID. they don't have a clue on any of this, and they're starving for information, starving for, you know, human intercourse. So, you know, we got to be there, man. This is really, really, it's almost pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Go ahead, Liz.
Mission Viejo last week, was it Thursday or Friday? The police department gave a presentation at the mortuary. It was quite interesting. So, but this was a great presentation.
Yeah, I'm working on a funeral arrangement for my sister-in-law now. And man, you're talking big money. I don't know if you guys, and I'm talking cremation, you're talking big money. So pay attention to those scams. Yeah. It's unbelievable. In fact, we were just at Forest Lawn and they were looking at a plot that we're going to, for it's a cremation in ground. And I said, well, what are the costs? They go, well, it depends. The higher you up you go on the hill and you can oversee the whole valley. I go, she's dead. Well, you know, she's not seeing anything. Yeah, but when people come to visit, you know, they'll put a chair up and they want to chit chat. And it's nice for that. I go, forget it. My brother-in-law, he's the same way. He goes, are you kidding me? You know, so just know it, you. And of course, you're all distraught. That's why I'm doing it for him, because he probably, well, he wouldn't get sucked in. He's pretty thrifty. So, but I mean, you know, they'll sell you these massive urns, beautiful urns. I go, it gets buried and nobody sees it. What, why would we do that? Oh, you know, but, you want to remember your loved one. I go, shh, please. Anyway.
But I think this has been going on for decades. Wow. I mean,
long. Yeah, but it seems more prevalent now. It seems like we're really kicking off in droves. Not to share any bad news, but.
Yeah. Okay. We're on to item six, old business speakers calendar. So we need to confirm, Tony, are you able to get hold of Rodriguez for May 16th?
Negative. I've sent countless emails to him. I even sent, you know, the last one, I sent with CC BCC to Evelyn, and still have not received any news or any return on my emails. And he doesn't have a phone that we can contact him in, so that's about it.
So we don't really have anything then for
correct
for May 16th. Okay. And I notice he's been absent at all the General SCAC meetings too. So what should we do if we can't get Tony to speak on Social Security?
Tony, I'm looking at my phone and I have a work number for Jeff Rodriguez. I don't know whether or not it still works, but I'll send it to you through a text message.
Okay, thank you.
Good, let's hope that works. Okay, but we definitely have to get something nailed down. All right, and the next thing is John Pointer. Can you get a speaker for C4A for July 18th?
I'm working on that. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Okay. So we'll take care of that. And now 6B, Lillian, would you, where's Lillian? Do I see?
Oh, I'm here.
There you are. Okay, I see you. Would you read the proclamation resolution? We want to get a vote on this item. So to say, I make a motion that the WEAAD proclamation be forwarded to the Board of Supervisors in Orange County Cities to declare June 15th World Elder Abuse Awareness Day.
I just want to clarify, you want me to read that, but at the end it says I and then my name and stuff. I'm not putting my name in there, right? Am I understanding that? Elaine, can you provide me with some guidance there?
Well,
I'd be happy to read it, but I don't think I can read that.
So what you're doing, well, wait a minute, Elizabeth, what you're doing then is you're referring this then to the the executive board or to SCAC.
I don't think it was.
We don't recognize, this committee does not forward things directly to the Board of Supervisors.
Right.
So it goes, Desiree?
Yes, and I don't believe that it was added to the agenda, but not as a recommendation for this committee to forward on to the SCAC to vote on it. So I think in the way it was presented on the agenda, it seemed more like a discussion or introduction, but not so much a recommendation that would require a motion and a vote on. So I'm not sure if that was the intention, Evelyn.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Turn up the volume. Okay, sorry. This is my mix up, Elizabeth. So, what we want to do is to forward a resolution to the Board of Supervisors and to the various cities in Orange County, for them to recognize World Elder Abuse Day. There is a template that Lillian very kindly provided us. So I did think this morning, this is the first time I've done this as a chair. I did realize this morning that it probably wasn't coming directly from our subcommittee. So so we are then asking the SCAC board executive committee to vote on this. Is that what our procedure should be, Elaine?
Yeah, what you could do is refer it to the executive board.
Okay.
Consideration.
Okay, so then what we have here then is, is it still a motion that our subcommittee forward this resolution to the SCAC executive board? Is that
our motion? Well, it's not on the agenda as an action item to take a vote on.
Oh.
So what you could do is discuss what it is, and then if there is a member of the executive board who then wants to get it on the executive board agenda as an action item. And also, I see you have the senior center outreach. So we already have a process in place for that, and that is through our senior center liaisons. So any outreach to the senior centers would go through Cynthia Thacker, through the senior center liaisons, not from individual committees. So if you would like to tell us what this World Elder Abuse Awareness Day is and provide some information. You do have an agenda.
Lillian, would you be kind enough to read the resolution?
Yeah. Give me 1 second, let me pull that up. So older adults deserve to be treated with respect and dignity to enable them to serve as leaders, mentors, volunteers, and vital participating members of our communities. In 2006, the International Network for the Prevention of Elder Abuse, in support of the United Nations International Plan of Action, proclaimed a day to recognize the significance of elder abuse as a public health and human rights issue. And in 2022 marks the 16th annual World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Its recognition will promote a better understanding of abuse and neglect of older adults, and the National Center of Elder Abuse and the Orange County Strategic Plan for Aging recognize the importance of taking action to raise awareness, prevention, and address elder abuse. As our population lives longer, we are represented by an opportunity to think about our collective needs and future as a nation, and ageism and social isolation are major causes of elder abuse in the United States. Recognizing that it is up to all of us to ensure that proper social structures exist so people can retain community and societal connections, reducing the likelihood of abuse and preventing abuse of older adults through maintaining and improving social support like senior centers,
human services, and transportation will allow everyone to continue to live as independently as possible and contribute to the life and vibrancy of our communities. And where there is justice, there can be no abuse. Therefore, NCEA urges all people to restore justice by honoring older adults. This day will provide everyone engaging in powerful movement and putting an end to abuse. So for June 15th of 2022, as World Elder Abuse Awareness Day in Orange County, everyone is encouraged to recognize and celebrate older adults and their ongoing contributions to the success and vitality of our country. So the Elder Abuse Day we're looking for to celebrate is on June 15th of this year.
You know, Lillian, can I get a copy of that? I can do that individually through our cities. I'll do my city with that. So if you'll shoot me that.
Yeah,
I'd love to do that.
I'll send it to Desiree and have her send it out to everyone then.
Perfect.
Also, keep in mind that SCAC is going to the May 10th, going to the May 10th Board of Supervisors meeting because May is Older Americans Month, where the Board of Supervisors will recognize May as Older Americans Month. And that's where we are presenting the priorities, the five top priorities that SCAC has prepared to present to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay.
Elizabeth, I got a point of order. I see that we've got James Vogel on. And James may have been also a speaker. I don't know if there was any confusion with that, but James, were you scheduled to be a speaker also?
I'm actually Investigator Jay Jones with the Sheriff's Department. I was here with Dan Foster. I don't know if you guys wanted anything else from me.
I'm so sorry. No, I wish you would have mentioned that. No, so
it's okay. I didn't want to mess up anything the plan of order you guys had. So
we get messed up very easily. Don't worry about it. Is there anything that wasn't covered that you would like to touch? Is that okay, Elizabeth? If he touches on
of course.
So basically my shop is the other end of elder abuse when it comes to physical and neglect, abandonment type of abuse. But it sounds like, kind of the bigger issues is the fraud and those types of scams that elders are being abused by. My shop kind of takes that by the caretakers of type of neglect. So is there anything you guys wanted to touch on that, or were you guys more leaning on
that? How did that come to your attention, James? Is that usually through family members or neighbors? How do we know when someone's a senior's being abused?
Sure. It's kind of all the above. So basically it needs to meet the criteria, right? So an elder is considered someone who's 65 and older. That would be considered an elder.
feel it, but it's me.
Right. And then usually who the suspects are, it's going to be someone who is caretaking for the elder. So it could be an adult child. It can be a hired caretaker. It could be a neighbor. So it could really be anybody, but as long as that person is performing a duty of some type of care towards the elder, that is who is going to be a potential suspect or abuser, if that makes sense.
How do you get wind of this? How do you know when you need to investigate?
Right. So there's a couple different ways. If an elder feels like they're being abused, they can call the police, as easy as that. A lot of times it gets reported by somebody else, honestly. Let's say their adult son who lives out of state, who's coming to visit mom or grandma, and they come home and they see mom or grandma who has obvious bruising, not just the normal bruising of, bumping into a chair or something, but kind of extreme bruising, or maybe their linens are soiled, the house is dirty, stuff like that. There's a large amount of money missing. Or even the elder or grandma mom made some type of comment like they're being abused. So it's usually reported either to the police, the sheriff's department, and or our adult protective services. If it's reported to adult APS, then they'll generate a report and usually let us know, which we'll do a follow-up case on as well. And if we see the elements of the crime being met, then of course we'll dive into it further, get protection for the elder, and hopefully arrest whoever the abuser is. But the biggest thing that we're really looking for is kind of what you mentioned earlier, Gene, is that victim prevention. The elders need to know when they're being abused and when they need to report it, and to understand what type of resources they have available for them. I've got a couple pages worth of phone numbers that they can reach out to. But I think that's the biggest thing. They just don't know who to reach out to and when to reach out for help. So,
and that appears to be the constant issue for us, is how do we get those pages of phone numbers you have mm-hmm. to the victims and or families of the victims? How does that information get out?
Right. Well, these town hall meetings, these meetings like this, but you know what? Your biggest phone number that you can reach out to is your APS. APS is going to have all of these resources. So you can reach out to the Adult Protective Services hotline, and you can speak to someone there who will give you any number that you may be looking for. Again, town hall meetings, meetings with the Sheriff's Department, we can provide these numbers as well.
Colleagues, any other questions for Jim? Well, Jim, thank you again for taking your time. I'm sorry that we didn't give you your due, because clearly you've got a lot of good information, and that's the other half of this. There's the fraud and there's the physical abuse, which probably is a lot more damaging, a lot more serious, because that's where death can result in.
Big time.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Happy Easter.
Thank you, Jim. All righty. Happy Easter to you. All right, Elizabeth. Thank you for indulging me.
Of course. All right. So getting back to this resolution, how shall we resolve this?
Well, I think what Elaine said is accurate, that it can go to the executive committee. We can look at that. But keep in mind, for us electeds, Sherry, we can do this on our own. By getting a copy of that, I'll present it to my council colleagues, and we'll make that happen for our city. But again, not representing SCAC, this is representing the city of Yorba Linda.
Yeah.
We have passed a resolution many years ago, so now we just do a proclamation every June for World Elder Abuse Awareness Day.
You know, that's a good idea, Sherry. Got to check and see if we did that. I think we did that too. So it may be just a proclamation.
Many cities kind of have a standing list of each month what they recognize.
Good. Yeah.
Okay. So, Elaine, do you feel that it needs to be enacted? We should make a resolution to put it on the executive board agenda when it meets.
I think any member of the executive board, just email me if you would like to have something put on the agenda for our next meeting. And then it can be discussed at that meeting, and the executive board can handle it.
Okay. Gene, you want to do that?
Well, I can, but I'm not really on this committee. I'm just observing. Probably ought to be you, Elizabeth. You're on the committee.
All right, I'll do it. Okay.
But I'll support it when we go to the exec committee.
Okay. All right. Next item. We're on B, number 6, B2, Senior Center Outreach. Carolyn Inman, who can't be here because of another meeting, she has some suggestions. She says, here, she said, we add, if it is too much to forward the entire toolkit to senior centers, consider the following. 1, send bookmarks to all senior centers and ask that they put them in a place where seniors can pick them up if they want to. She said, I mentioned that at a small literature piece was in the restrooms at Kaiser on domestic violence. That is a safe place to pick it up if a person is afraid someone might see them. At a registration or welcome desk might be okay. Number 2, send one poster to each senior center to raise consciousness. 3, go to senior council meeting in May and make a short announcement under public comments. She says, I'm going to try to do that at Irvine. This is our chance to possibly help some seniors. So any questions regarding Carolyn Inman's suggestions or how to implement them?
Well, just a reminder, we have the already set up within SCAC, the senior center liaisons. So right. Information that goes out to the senior centers gets distributed through those liaisons. So once the executive board addresses this, then the information can be distributed. And Cynthia Thacker, I'm sure, would be happy to talk to Carolyn about, you know, what is it should be sent and what is the basically the script to get that out to the senior centers. But remember, it's the liaisons that's why we have it set up. So there is contact with every single senior center within the county. So we don't want to circumvent that, because then we start losing some centers that are not getting covered.
Right. This is Evelyn. And the intent then here would be for all of us on the subcommittee to use our contacts. Actually, it would be all of SCAC, because everybody at SCAC has been basically assigned various community centers. And that we share the link to the WEAD toolkit with the senior centers, with our representatives. And Lillian has forwarded us the link. It has lots of information, posters, press releases, etc. So the follow-up would be for us to then forward this information, and we could draft, and I could draft an email to the senior centers that we coordinate with.
Okay, but again, Evelyn, that goes through Cynthia Thacker, the senior center liaison coordinator. So that, because there are more SCAC members than just are on this committee, we have two other standing committees as well. So okay. That's why all of it comes through Cynthia.
Okay, all right. So that would go to Cynthia then.
Any other issues on this subject? Okay. And then we're on to number 7, action items. Review and make findings required by government code subsection 54953E3. So recommendation, continue virtual meetings due to the proclaimed state of the emergency arising from COVID-19. Meeting in person presents imminent risk to the health and safety of attendees, and the emergency continues to directly impact the ability of the members to meet safely in person. So is it Desiree, or you're going to read off and we'll say yes or no?
Yes, we still need a motion and a second, and then I will do the roll call vote.
Do we have a motion?
Yeah, I'll make the motion. Oh, I can't. I'm not on the committee. I'm sorry.
I don't know that we accept this motion.
I'll second.
Okay, so Tony Rodella made the motion and Sherry Horn seconded.
Great. Tony Rodella's motion. Elizabeth Busick?
Yes.
Carol Downey?
Aye.
Scott Feig? Elaine Genoway?
Aye.
Sherry Horn?
Aye.
Carolyn Inman? Jim Levy? Nalita Mendoza? John Pointer?
Aye.
Tony Rodella?
Aye.
Dave Katzlaff? And Evelyn Velez?
Aye.
Hey, Desiree, you forgot me. Tony Olivato.
Oh, Tony Olivato. I'm sorry. I mistook you for making the first motion. Thank you for bringing that up. But we do have majority chair.
I vote no, by the way.
Okay, thank you.
It's time to meet in person. It's
absurd. Yeah, we'll come over to your house and say hi.
Yeah, do that.
All right, so it is passed, and we're now on to number 8, subcommittee report. Digital Divide Subcommittee. Dave Tetzloff is absent, and so Tony Alabado will speak.
Yeah, thanks, Elizabeth. We contacted Erica about the 2,500 iPads, and the latest information, this is of April 8th information, of the 2,500, 2,042 are distributed, 69 are pending paperwork, so that's 2,111. Will be out there, 389 to be distributed. So Carolyn, Dave and I dangerously met at the Strawberry Farms golf course to discuss future activity for the subcommittee. And what we talked about is we didn't really understand, we'd never seen the really how the process that's been used to, you know, distribute these, the application form or the publicity and plans to distribute the remaining 389 machines. So we're interested in taking a look at that. Also, I had discussed with Erica some time ago, if there's a way for us to determine whether the 2,111 iPads that are currently out there, are they actually being used? And apparently there is a way for the technology segment at the county that the Office of Aging uses to look at the data usage. Some iPads have actually been returned. I guess some people have them and didn't use them, and so they returned them. But we'd be interested in knowing of those machines that have been distributed, are they being used? And depending on what we would find out from the data usage, then we would determine whether or not to contact the people who have them to find out what the barriers are to using them. So that's a possibility. That's kind of the short term look at the iPads that have been procured. Longer term, we talked about Cal State Fullerton's demographic group. Now that group has spoken to the General SCAC Committee over the last decade more than once, and they have ability to gather data. So one of the things we talked about going forward to the executive committee on this is contacting that, and Dave has a contact with the Cal State Demographic Group to see if they would be willing to profile the digital divide in Orange County. We don't really know on a sort of a macro level what the extent of this this digital divide actually is, and that group might be willing to do a profile for us of seniors, people over 65 years, to find out to give us a picture of what really the extent of the digital divide is. So it was a productive session out there at the golf course. And that's it.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Any questions? All right. We'll move on to, 8B is what's next. However, we covered that with 6B. So we'll go on to the next one. Number 9, the legislative tracking volunteer, John Pointer.
Elizabeth, I sent a report out called the CSL Advocate to Elizabeth, to Tony, to Sherry, Jim Levy, and to Evelyn. And I thought that was a pretty good way to summarize what the current status of legislation is. So I was going to see if I could find it. Sorry, you get to see all my mess here. So bear with me just a second. I'll have to try another way. There we go. Okay, this document is intended for distribution to a wide audience that gives you a broad overview of what the legislation for 2022 is and how to access it. So see if I can move anything here. So this basically, these two pages focus on our legislation, CSL, at this point. I'll have, when Evelyn gets a chance, she can distribute this to everybody when she gets access to a computer again. Okay. Then we move on to the legislation on a larger scale that goes beyond CSL. And this document, this information is compiled by Justice and Aging. And this represents all legislation impacting seniors that they are made aware of. This isn't all legislation impacting seniors. This is legislation that has been brought to the attention of Justice and Aging. And it's sorted by MPA goal. And our legislation would be reflected in here as well. So this goes on for six pages. So this gives you a pretty good idea of what's out there. Now, there is also a document that CSL produces called a monthly report. Well, it's no longer going to be a monthly report. All we have to do is produce it in March. It identifies the CSL legislation. And just like it is portrayed here, if you click on this link, that takes you to Leg Info. That gives you the current status of that bill. So that will always be more current than our monthly report, which is published on day one, is probably out of date on day two. So again, this is really good stuff. So Janice came up with this, and this is really smart. Okay, I'm gonna take this opportunity to provide a plug as well. Friends of CSL, and finally, May 3rd, Senior Rally Day, virtual presentation, AM program will again be focused on the Master Plan for Aging. Opening speaker, Kim McCoy-Wade, followed by Susan Damaris, who is the director for CDA, California Department of Aging, and then following up with several other speakers. The afternoon program takes what you just saw here and invites legislators and attendees to the Senior Rally Day to come together and discuss, for example, SB 842. And then we won't be jumping around from room to room. It will just be 1 o'clock, SB 842, 115, AB 2069, that kind of thing. And we'll go on till about 3 or 3:30. I think it's a little cleaner than having you decide which bills you wanted to listen to. This way you can participate in the whole thing. Do I have any questions?
Yes.
Yes. Is it 10 a.m. till 12 and then 1 till 3 or 3:30?
Correct.
Thank you.
And I just want to confirm it is May 3rd, not the 4th. I had it in my calendar as the 4th.
Last year was the 4th. This year it's the 3rd. Any other questions, folks? Thank you. That's all I have, Elizabeth.
Okay, thank you, John. Any questions? We've already checked that. Now we're on number 10, new membership, and we don't have any names, so we can go on to the next one. Number 11, announcements and roundtable discussions. Okay, raise your hand. Sherry.
I guess this would go under roundtable discussions. I'm sorry to bring it up, but Tony said that they met in person because, you know, I would like to say that I think hybrid meetings, I don't see why we should go back to one thing or the other. I think hybrid meetings provide an awful lot of benefit too. You know, yes, there's the social if you want to get together, but you also, if you're taking care of the spouse, you can be at home and do that. You can get some extra sleep. You don't have to be exposed to the freeway and possible accidents, the pollution, the particulate matter from tires and brake pads and all that other kind of stuff. In other words, it gives you an avenue to participate without the downside. Not everyone wants to get dressed and stuff themselves in a little room in Santa Ana every month. You know, it's not saying one is better than the other. But having this has certainly shown us a way that can be much more inclusive and less stress. I much prefer it this way. So when we're talking about, well, we don't want to do it this, I think we ought to move to have hybrid meetings a thing and not worry about going back or not going back or whatever, and let everyone participate how they'd like. Thank you. That's all.
Okay. I couldn't agree with you more. All right, Elaine.
Okay. Just as we were talking about fraud earlier, just to let you know that in Laguna Niguel on Wednesday, May 4th, we are going to have a presentation on, I started these what are called Savvy Senior Seminars, which are for seniors, pre-seniors, and the adult children of seniors. And the speaker is an investigator from the State Contractors Licensing Board, talking about how contractors perpetuate fraud in their practices and on seniors. And I know some of us heard this a couple of years ago, where I was just like, I didn't even know that could happen. And so I think it's really important to get the word out. So if you're anywhere near Laguna Niguel on Wednesday, May 4th at 5:30, come on over to Sea Country Senior and Community Center, because it's a shame how some contractors will use someone's age to perpetuate fraud, hoping that their life will time out before something gets to court, or their memory will time out before their case gets to court. So I will send the flyer out. It's free, everyone's welcome. So I just want to make sure that you're aware of that, because we hear a lot about financial fraud. We don't hear too much about contractor fraud. So just letting you know.
Okay. I definitely want to go to that. So I'm going to be hiring some contractors. That's great. Our next, anybody else for announcements and roundtable discussion?
No. Oh, Elizabeth, I want to thank you and everybody for stepping in today at the last minute and running the meeting. I really appreciate it.
Well, it hasn't been a problem, and I just hope you get well soon. So, public matters. At this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, but we don't have any public, so there's no point to go on reading something.
We actually do. We actually have a couple.
But I'll continue. Okay. start again. At this time, members of the public may address the council regarding any items within the subject jurisdiction, provided that no action is taken on off-agenda items unless authorized by law. Comments shall be limited to 3 minutes unless the chair pre-identifies a different time at the start of the meeting for all public speakers. So, all right.
So we did not receive any requests to speak in advance, but if there are members of the public this morning that would like to address the committee, please use a hand raise icon or press *9 and I will unmute you. And I'm seeing none, Chair.
All right. Well, in that case, we are ready for item 13, adjournment. And if there's nothing else to say, nobody else has anything, the meeting is now adjourned. It was nice seeing everybody, and it's 10:36.